Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for Triangulation is brought to you by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Triangulation, episode 256, recorded Monday, July 11th, 2016. Robert Scoble. Triangulation is brought to you by Blue Apron. Blue Apron will send you fresh, high-quality ingredients to cook delicious meals with simple step-by-step instructions right to your door. See what's on the menu this week and get your first three meals free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/twit. That's blueapron.com/twit. And by Wealthfront. Wealthfront is a low-cost automated investment service that is the most sophisticated way to invest your money. Whether you've got millions or you're just starting out, visit wealthfront.com/triangulation and sign up to get your free personalized investment portfolio. That's wealthfront.com/triangulation. And by Corning. Corning's incredibly durable Thunderbolt and USB 3.0 optical cables are longer, thinner, lighter, and stronger. Go to corning.com/twit and save up to $130 on their superior Thunderbolt optical cables. It's time for Triangulation, the show where we talk to some of the most interesting people in technology and always gain a lot of insight. And I'm really thrilled to have an old friend, a dear friend, and I think somebody who's been on Triangulation before with us, but not in a long time, Robert Scoble. Hello, the Scobalizer.
Hey, what's up?
As always, he's got the latest toy. Hey, Robert, how are you?
Of course. Of course.
Have you been on Triangulation before? I can't remember if I've interviewed you.
Yeah, it's been a while.
So we've covered the past. We don't need to cover the past.
I was working as a futurist at Rackspace.
Right. Well, let's catch you up. So you left Rackspace not so long ago. What, 6 months ago?
No, in April.
April, not even that long ago.
Yeah.
And now you're at somewhere called VReal?
No. I'm at Upload VR, which is a media company covering the VR and AR space.
What's the matter?
I'm not even really officially working there. I'm just
hanging out. They ain't got a t-shirt?
No, I got this shirt. So I've been doing this world tour and meeting startups, and this is one of the startups I met up in Seattle.
That's one thing you've inspired me with, of course, is you're the king of meeting and greeting startups. And we really should talk because I would love to have more coverage of startups. But it's challenging because probably, what would you say, what percentage of startups never go anywhere?
99.9999%.
Oh, wow. I was going to say 90.
The average VC tells me they see 3,000 startups a year and they fund six. And of those six, maybe one makes it. So it's pretty hard to make it as a startup. And when we say make it, we're talking about a unicorn, right?
That's the part of our value. Yeah. So part of that's the problem is that a VC is looking for a big score. Because, like the movie industry, it's hit-based. You know, if you only get one hit in every six you make, you got to make a big hit with that one to make up for the losses on the other five. Although, and correct me if I'm wrong, I've been watching Silicon Valley, the TV show, and I'm learning so much about the ecosystem there. It does seem the case that many VCs and angel investors cover their behinds when they make these investments. They get preferential treatment when there's a sale and
they absolutely do, and if you're an entrepreneur, you should understand that they get their money out first. So if you say you sold for $20 million and they put $20 million in, they get first shot at that, right? Which means you get nothing, so you better make more than they put in.
You would think I would have learned that back in 2004 when Paul Allen sold Tech TV. They lured us. This is another lesson for people who go to work for startups. They lured us with, I think, something like 160,000 shares in Tech TV. And they're not supposed to do this, but the CEO of Tech TV, this is probably in 1999 or 2000, did a back of envelope calculation and said, well, if we end up being worth this much, your shares are going to be worth this much. And it was over $1 million. And of course, the intent is to keep employees working with their nose to the grindstone, working hard.
Yeah.
And then, of course, Tech TV doesn't make a whole lot of money, ends up selling for some money to, I think, a few hundred million dollars anyway to Comcast. And so I'm saying, well, I have. And it turns out the shares were subordinated to Paul Allen's shares. He was the owner, and he gets all the money. Yeah. And that was an eye opener. I think a lot of employees go to startups.
We call that dilution.
Yeah, I was diluted.
You were diluted.
I was diluted.
Diluted and diluted.
And there's a certain, there are SEC rules about what they can tell you, and you're supposed to have education. They're supposed to offer you education. But really, let's be frank, they often use this to manipulate employees, to give them the impression that they're going to make a lot of money.
Well, that and he might have been accurate when he did that offer to you, but then conditions changed, and they changed the rules of the game on you.
Right.
And they probably didn't sit you back down and said, now you have to make Paul Allen has to sell it for $1 billion for you to make the same
money. The good news is, unlike some people, the worst thing that can happen to you is you end up paying taxes on the options or on the shares, and then the shares go up underwater and you don't get your money back.
And that really hurt people in the dot-com bust around 2000. I have several friends who thought they were multimillionaires and ended up owing money. So if you're an executive and have enough shares to matter, you really should sit down with a tax lawyer and understand your, and a financial planner probably, and really understand what you're in for.
By the time I talked to a lawyer, it was way too late. It was way too late.
That's the problem.
Lesson learned. I'm not bitter at all about it. But I guess the point is, and this is why the jobs bill worries me a little bit. There's the Jobs Act, which was ostensibly to stimulate investment. One of the things it did is opened up investing to everybody. It used to be rules about how much money you had, how much your liquidity, your net worth was. Some people say, "Oh yeah, you just want to pull the ladder up behind you," but no, it was really to make sure that you were a savvy investor and understood the risk involved in investing in these high-flying companies.
And could take the risk with something other than the money that was going to put food on your kids' plates, a lot of people play around with money they shouldn't. It's just like gambling. You shouldn't be gambling with money that you need to pay your rent.
I have mixed feelings about it because on the other hand, it's a stimulus and people are – it really opened up the door to crowdfunding in a real way. I think I'm always ragging on Kickstarter for the same reason, because people, I think, don't understand. You're not an investor in this. You get no payoff. You may not even get a thing.
Let me get my Oculus out.
There you go. Perfect example.
Oculus, a lot of people put some money into it, and they didn't get anything for years. And they actually were nice enough to send you a headset eventually.
Right.
But you didn't get any piece of the company. So, the people who started the company made a few hundred million dollars and you got nothing.
I remember a big threat. I'm not unhappy. I put the money in and got the developer's edition, which wasn't all that interesting. I played with it a little bit, gave it to Chris, he was an intern at the time. And he did some stuff with it, which is cool. He was a high school kid. He got some value out of it. But I was very pleased that then there was a lot of discussion on Kickstarter when they sold out to Facebook for a lot of money. Well, is that right? I mean, we essentially funded Palmer Luckey, and then he sells out. But, yeah, that's the deal. You gave him money. Yeah. You got your developer edition or a T-shirt.
And you really didn't fund him. What you did was pay for the manufacturing costs of the first batch.
Right. So I do want to talk about startups and what you've seen lately, and certainly about virtual reality. Before the show, we were talking about Pokemon Go. I think it's very telling that the first big viral game of 2016 is an augmented reality game.
Well, augmented reality is stretching it a little bit, but it's getting there.
The fun part is augmented reality.
It really doesn't. The Pokemon's not locked onto the world. I mean, if you get into the HoloLens and you see a virtual item in a HoloLens, it's locked onto the world, and you can walk around it, and it's really, really amazing.
That's a good point.
Pokemon's
because
not true.
If you see the Pokemon, and of course, as soon as you start to catch a Pokemon, it's a little different on iOS and Android immediately goes into a augmented reality scene where you see what your camera on your phone is seeing and the Pokemon is there, which has unfortunately spawned a million images on Instagram of people posing with Pokemon, and I'm as guilty as anybody. But you make a good point, because if I keep walking, the Pokemon just keeps going away from me. You can't go around it. You can't go past it. It's kind of just floating in space on top of it. But you're right. But
it does get you used to the idea that you're looking through a virtual layer onto the real world.
And we've seen other augmented reality. It's not by far the first augmented reality. There was an augmented reality browser a couple of years ago, and it didn't take off. It's like, so what? Was it Google? Where to superimpose... You'd be looking through your camera on your phone, and you'd see places of interest superimposed on the world.
It came out of Europe. I'll remember it in a second.
Yeah, but it was like it didn't take off.
Now, and Snapchat's doing augmented reality on your face.
That's
right?
True.
Maps, that's a good point.
No, that's a good
things
point.
Onto your face.
Yeah,
but it's only we're only getting little tastes of what's coming in about three years with HoloLens and Magic Leap, and
that's what I want to talk to you
about. Apple's working on something, and there's two storms coming, and one's just hitting the shore right now, and that's virtual reality. We're literally just getting our first virtual reality headsets, and I think the average consumer won't get it until mobile phones come along that have much better sensors, much better screens, much better GPUs, and I figure that's 18 to 36 months. But, you know, me and you are playing with our Vives. I think you have a Vive as well, right?
I have a Rift. I have a Vive. I will get a PS4 VR. I will get anything that comes along.
Because we're nerds.
I have the Gear VR. Well, let's talk. I have eight versions of Google Cardboard. Yeah. And actually, I might have a different point of view on VR. So let's talk about that in a moment. Robert Scoble, the Scobalizer, is our guest today. Somebody said you've been on Triangulation 5 times. I don't think that's true, but... It's great to have you back.
Maybe twice. I don't think five. I've been on Twit a lot.
Yeah. I mean, you've been a regular on the other shows. The thing I always mention this, but it's worth mentioning again. I've known Robert since 1994, right?
Yeah.
When I was doing a radio show on KGO in San Francisco. That's when
radio.
Audio. Yeah, audio only. Didn't you bring a camera by once?
I think you did.
It was a little spy cam, and it was my first experience of a spy cam. But Robert was our chat mod and was a regular on the show. And I think I remember you sitting across from me with a laptop, which was probably in those days a black and white, a monochrome laptop with one of those ball cameras on it. Probably the first time I ever saw it. And
I also had a QuickTake, an Apple QuickTake.
Yeah. So
one of the first digital cameras that consumers got in the
more than 20 years, remember? Robert. More than 20 years.
I know. Isn't that crazy? It seems like yesterday too. You've forgotten more about Windows than anybody even
I'm trying.
Knows,
but... I'm trying to forget more about. Hey, I don't have to worry about IRQ conflicts anymore. That's a blessing.
Well, you know, it's funny. Now that I have a PC again, this is my first PC since I left Microsoft, running this VR system here, and. Man, it's crashing once in a while and bringing up weird error messages.
You forget how bad.
Man.
And Robert was a blogger for Microsoft.
Yeah.
So
for years.
All right, we're going to take a break. We'll talk more with Robert Scoble, the Scobalizer. Where should people go? What's your website, or where should people
follow
you? Facebook,
man. Is there anything else other than Facebook? I guess there's Snapchat. I'm on Snapchat too, and Twitter.
Do you do the Twitter?
I'm there once in a while,
I'm less interested.
I'm actually
in
getting more into it lately because I'm watching the VR community, and it's a lot easier to follow everybody that's not your friends.
You can make a list and just follow that list.
I have two lists on Twitter of the VR community, one that's brands and one that's people. And it's a good way for me to follow what's going on because the VR and AR space, like you said, is moving so quick. I mean, a week ago, we would not even have thought about Pokemon.
Right.
And now that's the biggest game ever. You know, that's crazy.
More with the Scobalizer in just a bit. Our show today brought to you by The Real World. Dag nabbit. This real world keeps imposing, you know? Kids, here's a little tip. Uncle Leo reminds you. You should eat a meal once in a while while you're chasing Pokemon. Don't forget to eat. The problem is, we all face this, we're busy, we work all day. It's 5 o'clock, the whistle blows, you go home. The last thing you want to do is plan a meal, shop for a meal, get home, cook the meal. You're hungry. So unfortunately, too many of us, and I'm just as guilty as anybody, eat out. We go to fast food or the Applebee's on the corner, and we have a meal that makes us not happy and probably is not healthy, and go home into our sad little, you know, antiseptic homes. This is not the way we were meant to live, and Blue Apron wants to change that. Their mission, to make incredible home cooking accessible to everyone while supporting a more sustainable food system, while setting the highest standards for ingredients, and building a community of home chefs. You say, me, a home chef? Never. Well, you might be surprised, and you will enjoy it. So what happens is, instead of worrying about the meal planning, the shopping, you get home, and you, by the way, you choose a delivery date that fits your schedule. So if it's every Wednesday, you get home Wednesday after work, there's your lovely Blue Apron box inside. Three meals for two, or three meals for a family. It's refrigerated. There's nothing frozen. Even the meats and fish aren't frozen. And by the way, they use the highest quality standards. 150 local farms, fisheries, and ranchers across the U.S. The seafood is sourced sustainably. The beef is raised humanely. The chickens are free range. Pork is raised naturally. It's the stuff you would buy if you went and really paid attention to what you were shopping for. They use regenerative farm practices, so you can feel good about the food. And you get, look at that. That's a typical example. You get exactly the number of ingredients you need to make the recipe. If it's one lemon, it's one lemon. There's no waste. One clove of garlic, one scallion, whatever it is. So you always have exactly the right ingredients. No more, no less. They give you a great recipe card, so you can follow the recipe card. And, incidentally, you can also go to the website if you want help with techniques of, you know, cutting and things like that, and they have great videos there. It's going to save you money. Now, this is something I think people assume, oh, well, this is going to cost more than if I did it myself. No, you'll save. Shopping at the grocery store is 60% more expensive than Blue Apron. So you're going to save money. It's under $10 per person. And you get the joy of cooking this meal. Look, there's a perfect example. You get to choose the meals you want. In fact, go to the Blue Apron site now, blueapron.com/twit. Take a look at the menu plan. Great meal. Spinach and basil pesto gnocchi with summer squash, green beans, and fresh mozzarella. Summer vegetable pizza with garlic, lemon, broccolini. Oh, just, and they have family recipes and as well as couples recipes. So the family recipes have more kid-friendly ingredients and, of course, more portions. Serrano pepper and goat cheese burgers with zucchini cilantro slaw. Oh, and by the way, you don't have to pick that. You could pick what you want from their selection. Have it delivered on your day, and you will love it. Research shows Blue Apron families cook nearly three times more often. You're building strong bonds. Your house will smell delicious. The satisfaction you get of making a meal for your family and serving it to them, I don't know why, but every time I do that, I feel like this is the best food I've ever had. Because I think because you make it, you have some investment in it, something about it. It's just wonderful. I want you to try it. And free, by the way. Three meals free and free shipping. They ship to 99% of the continental United States. Go to blueapron.com/twit. You will love how good it feels and tastes to create incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron. blueapron.com/twit. I'm a believer. I'm a big believer in Blue Apron. I love their mission.
Me too.
Do you do it?
Oh, yeah.
You have what you have. Okay, you've got your wife, Miriam.
Yep.
And Milan is your son.
I have two younger kids, Milan and Ryan.
And then, of course, I know Patrick because he went to school with my kids here in Petaluma.
Yeah, he's going to be a cop. Well, he just got his uniform.
NYPD.
NYPD. Yeah.
You must be so
proud
of him.
What a time to.
I know.
I am proud, but I'm freaked out too.
You know what? We need. I know Patrick. I love Patrick. I admire his choice. He's choosing to serve and protect. And you know what? I know that he that's what we need. We need more officers like Patrick in the force. They're very lucky to have him. He went to the academy.
Yeah. That's a lot of fun.
Are you surprised? I mean, I'm sure you thought he'd be a geek like you.
I'm not surprised because I let him watch 9/11, and I think that's really what kicked him off. He lives a block from Ground Zero, and if you ever go to New York, have him give you a tour of the the World Trade Center's museum. He does a better job than the docents there do.
Well, we went, you know, we were there a couple of months ago. We went and I cried. And you know where I cried the hardest? Is not so much, of course, sad, the 3,500 people who worked there and died. But I cried the hardest when I saw the rescue people who went in.
Yeah.
Who to save lives, went in into this most horrific, dangerous situation and then lost theirs. And you see things that it's, you know, Jeff Jarvis, who, of course, was a survivor of 9/11, hasn't been there because I think he might be right. He thinks it's just going to be too triggering for me.
Yeah.
But it was triggering for me, and I was across the country. You see the crushed fire truck. You see the rescue vehicles covered with dust and burnt out. And it just brings it home so potently. I could see how that Patrick would see that and say, I want to serve.
Yeah.
Those people really did an amazing, amazing thing. And that's where I teared up the most. It's like I broke down when I saw that fire truck. It's like, oh, my God. And the stories, they tell the stories of people. And there's badges.
What got me was the they have phones around the museum where you can listen to the voice mail on people who died. And it's their friends going, hey, will you call me? I'm worried about you. Mm. You know, stuff like that. And that gets me. Yeah. Anyways.
Well, you know what? We don't need to skim over it because I think it's really important. Yeah. And you know, here it is. 15.
It was a rough week last week, too, because you see the same thing.
Nothing but rough weeks for the last few years.
The cops are getting shot at and they're moving toward.
You know what's sad? Yeah.
Where the bullets are and everybody else is running.
The Dallas police force, I'm told by everybody, is really an exemplar police force. And they were there protecting the Black Lives Matter protesters. They were really there to support them. And it was such a tragedy. That's real heroism. And Patrick is a hero because he's doing the same thing. You know, he doesn't know what he's going to face, but he says, no, they need me. I need to do this job. And he's doing it. So be very proud. Be very proud.
I am very proud.
Yeah. Really amazing. Very
proud. I'm seeing him next week. I'm going to New York to do a speech. Going to get to see him.
So good.
Looking forward to that.
Graduate of McNair School right over here.
Yeah. Petaluma, baby.
Petaluma High. Petaluma representing. All right. Yeah. Whew. You know, I do like to talk about that a little bit, though, because we deal in this kind of fantasy world, don't we? And and I think so many of us play video games, Call of Duty and, you know, Doom, and you kind of get inured to the blood and the loss of life in these games. And it's really probably a good dose of reality once in a while for people to see those horrific videos on Facebook. Facebook, now, you're a big... last time you were here, you gave me
I still love Facebook. I'm
a
glad
Facebook
I
tutorial. Facebook. You gave me a Facebook tutorial. You showed me how to use Facebook better. And I have to say, my experience on Facebook is consistently better than any other social network because of real names. That makes a big difference. Yeah. You know, and everybody is challenged by Facebook. Facebook, like all social media, you love it and you hate it at the same time.
Me too. And I'm one of its biggest proponents.
Well, I think you said, I think you said a year ago, you watched, this is, I can't remember exactly what you said, but I said, well, everybody take a note of this because Robert's making a prediction. And it was essentially, this is it. This is the dominant vehicle for communication, period. And we learned that last week with the young woman, her boyfriend has just been shot. And what did she turn to? She didn't call 9/11. She didn't. Yeah. Just tape a video. She went, and interestingly, she knew to go to Facebook Live and started streaming it live. And there's a reason to do that because it's instant. People are seeing it right away. Now, Facebook took it down an hour later.
Well, they took it down for an hour or something, and they say it was a technical issue that caused that.
I feel like that's fudging it a little bit, but you know what probably happened? It's community policing in the standards, right? So people just press the button. Oh, this is too much. I'm seeing somebody die. This is too much, and probably there's a threshold, 20 buttons or whatever, and Facebook has an automatic process of okay, shut it down till review. It took them an hour to review it. And immediately, and Zuckerberg said this, and they said this in their post. No, we take down stuff. What did they say?
They said if it glorifies violence.
Glorifies violence.
Yeah.
But this is not glorifying violence, and so we're going to keep it up. Yesterday on Twitter, Jeff Jarvis said Facebook needs an independent, somebody like the New York Times public editor, who is not a Facebook employee but is independent of Facebook, to kind of make editorial judgment calls in this case. Because there's a fiduciary responsibility as a corporation to make money.
I'm not too worried about it because the uproar, if that video really never reappeared, it would reappear elsewhere.
It didn't matter at that point. That's why live is so powerful, right?
That's true, too. But you know as well as I do, if there's 10 people watching this video live, there'll be 100 people or 1,000 people who watch it recorded because people are at work right now and they don't have time to watch this. And they'll put it on their podcast service and watch it whenever they want to, when they're going home in the subway or whatever, right? And so the recording is more watched than the live. The live is very powerful. In my case, I use a lot of live because while I'm interviewing somebody, my audience can help me with questions. And that really makes my interviews better. And I really appreciate that.
Yeah,
you know, if I'm interviewing somebody about something really technical, like I just interviewed the founder of Sentient.ai, an augmented artificial intelligence company. And he's talking, he did a little whiteboard on how artificial intelligence works, and it was very technical. And my audience is way more technical than I am, and they really helped me out with, hey, why don't you ask this question, because that will draw a better answer out of him than what I would come up with.
Preaching to the choir, dude. Who's had live interactive comments on his show for 22 years? That's why we did a chat show in a chat room in 1994.
Yeah.
That's why I still do it today.
I learned a lot of this stuff from you.
Oh, you don't have to say that. But it is true that reason to do live is so that you can have those live interactions with your audience. Otherwise, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
In fact, it's more convenient for the audience, as you point out. More people will watch the non-live stuff. And to this day, I mean, I don't like to think of us as a podcast network, but to this day, the audio traditional form podcasts are the most consumed versions of our content. But I really am glad that we do this live in real time because it's so valuable. And even if that's
I was just thinking about Facebook since I was on with you last. Live has come up, and 360 video is really starting to take. And
I'm excited about that as well.
I am too. It's not going to be used as much because one, you need a new camera. Although, shoot, I should have brought it over. I have a new camera that snaps onto my iPhone that does 360 video.
I ordered the. let's see what I have. I mean, I love the Ricoh Theta S.
Yeah, but the one that hooks onto your iPhone will do live broadcast from your iPhone to like YouTube 360. And so you can do live broadcasting of 360. And that's really cool if you're in the right situation where 360 matters, right? Yeah. If I'm at Coachella and I'm in the front row of a music festival, you want to watch that live, you know, or even better yet, if I'm in a sporting event.
Crappy quality, isn't it?
It is at some level, but if you get close enough, it's actually pretty good. I put up a video that I did at Coachella, and it got 2.2 million views.
Wow.
So,
wow.
You know,
that's amazing.
If you're watching it in VR, in a VR headset, it's really amazing. It really makes you feel like you're there, even though the quality is not, we're in the VGA days of VR.
Yeah.
We're in the early days. I mean, in my career, thinking back.
Here's the Coachella video if you're watching on the stream. This is
that's a lot of fun, you know, and you can scroll around.
And you
around.
Did that with what kind of camera?
I had six. That was with six GoPros on a Freedom 360 rig.
So that's significantly better quality than, say, a Theta S.
It's double the resolution. It's not as big a deal on Facebook as you might expect because Facebook shrinks
it down.
They do a lot of compression and they shrink it down to 4K maximum, so you can't get higher than 4K. But the Samsung Gear VR that I have over here is a 4K camera, and it's pretty close to this on Facebook. It's hard to tell. And that's a $400 camera. The wow. camera that I shot that Coachella video cost $5,500 bucks total because right. I had to
buy, well, that's why I like the Theta.
Six GoPros. Right. I had to buy a Freedom 360 rig to connect them all. That was $700
You
something.
Bought that stuff? And,
Rackspace bought some of it. And then I had you have to get a color software, which costs $1,000 to stitch all those things together. So yeah, it's being a pioneer is expensive.
Oh, really? I hadn't heard.
Yeah, you know.
Well, I told Lisa the other, like a couple of months ago, I said to Lisa, "Do I have to buy the Galaxy S7?" She said, "Yes, you have to buy the Galaxy S7. I don't want to buy another smartphone. No, you have to because this is your job." And it gets, it does add up, but you know what? It is part of the, you know, at some point you just go, well, that's a line item on the budget because this, you have to try all this stuff. And I don't
if
like.
If you want to be a, if you want to be a media guy, you got to keep up. I bought my Oculus. I bought my Vive.
Me too.
Samsung I got because of Upload VR, but this stuff is expensive.
Yeah.
Got to put some money down.
Well, and I think you and I, to a lesser degree, but you are especially are interested in what's the next thing. So you've always been an early adopter and quick to jump on. And if there's a criticism of Robert Scoble, it's that he's enthusiastic about everything. It's hard not to be, right?
I like shiny objects.
I do, too. And, you know, that's why Dvorak and I were kind of Lennon and McCartney on that because, like Paul McCartney, I was, oh, everything's beautiful. And he was more like, ah, everything sucks. And the two of us kind of – but I have learned – to be a little more skeptical. And I'll be frank, I think the jury's still out on virtual reality.
I don't think so. I think it is for some people. My wife gets sick in it and she can't use it.
Well, I think that's a significant issue. 10%, we think it's 10% of all people will get nauseous from virtual reality. And it doesn't look like there is an obvious fix for that. There's a lot of debate over what it is. And at first, of course, Palmer Luckey and the Oculus folks said, oh, it's latency. You know, it's the amount of time between when you turn your head and the time the picture actually turns. And we're fixing that, which they have considerably. I don't think it's latency. I think, of course, latency would be a bad thing because one of the things that makes you sick is the same thing that makes you sick in a car, where your head's sensing one kind of movement, your eyes are sensing a different kind, and there's a disconnect. But I think there's a deeper physiological reason, and I don't know how you address this, which is that your convergence distance of your eyes, you tell distance with two ways, with convergence muscles, that's how you, and the focal muscles. And they should match. If I'm looking at this Darth Vader Lego, my eyes will converge on it. My focus will converge on it. That distance will agree. And your body biologically is trained. If these distances disagree by a significant amount, you're hallucinating. You ate something bad, throw up. And I think that's hard.
Your debate. Ears are also geo-echoing on your environment, and your ears play into this too.
Right.
And so if the sound doesn't match up with what you're seeing, that also causes
it's a weaker signal, but if you add all the signals together what's interesting is that some people it doesn't bother you, I guess. I take it.
My kids, doesn't bother me, doesn't bother most of my friends. My wife.
But it's just like car sickness or seasickness. Some people are more susceptible than other people to seasickness.
What's weird is I get seasick and I don't get sick in VR.
Well, that's what I think. I don't think it's an inner ear problem, which some people have said. You know, it's more deep than that and more physiologically challenging.
It's also a content problem.
Right.
If your camera accelerates, it makes a lot of people sick. And if your camera is on a boat. First of all, it made me fall when I was in a raft in a VR headset on the Grand Canyon River that's going through the Grand Canyon. I was falling because my brain was saying the boat's going that way, and it wanted my body to go to counteract it.
Yeah.
And it made me queasy as well because of the motion of the boat. in the optics. So yeah, you can get sick a few ways, but for the most part, well, I don't get sick.
The reason I bring this up is, can a technology succeed that makes 10% of all users, and you don't know until you try it, sick?
Yeah, I think it can.
Okay, that's one answer. I think that that's a significant problem because people are going to try it, and 1 in 10 people are going to go, oh, that's awful.
What I find interesting is my wife really enjoys watching my kids play in VR on the couch, on the big screen, because over here I got, you know, selfie tennis.
You have a Vive set up. And then, well, by the way, that's another challenge with the Vive is you have to take a 10 by 10 space or more,
clear of
everything so that you can. If you could do that, you have these dual cameras.
You have to have these lighthouses, they call them, up on the
wall. Wow, you've mounted them on your wall. You're very dedicated to this.
Yeah, you know.
Is this the best technology right now?
Today.
You know what's missing for me is really compelling content.
There's a lot. There's 80 experiences on mine, and
which is the one that you keep playing. See, this is the problem. I play them all for half an hour, and go, yeah, that's great, and then I don't go back. What is the one you keep playing?
I like selfie tennis. I'm trying to get in shape, and it gets me to move around and swing my arms.
I'll have to try. I haven't tried it. Selfie tennis. That's the name of it.
Yeah. But the thing that's catching me is the social VR experiences where I'm playing with other people. Rec Room is one we're playing a lot at Upload. At Upload, we have four bays.
How do you play social VR, though? Because you only want a person
over the internet.
Over the internet.
Yeah, yeah. So if you, and this is a problem, right now nobody else has Vives.
You're the only
one.
You
do.
You and I can play.
It would be fun to do a show, actually, with you playing. VR. Yeah, that'd be fun.
What we should do right now is stop this show, and I should go in the other room, but we're not going to do that.
No. Later, because I'd have to get you set up and figure out how to get in the same room and all that stuff.
F and Dunn in our chat room points out, hey, a significant number of people get seasick on boats. That doesn't stop people from buying boats.
No.
Good point. Good point. Let's take a break.
Go ahead.
Our guest is Robert Scobel, the Scobelizer. We'll be back. I want to talk more about VR. I want to talk about AR. I want to talk about your new job. I want to talk about anything you see in the future as being hot. I mean,
job implies I'm getting paid.
It's not a job. It's an adventure.
It's a lifestyle.
Well, you and I, we should talk. I can't pay you a lot, but I can help you. We could maybe do a show. We could do something. Let's talk about that. I've always wanted to have you. I remember when you and Loic came by and said, we should do a startup show. And I said, well, could you do it every week? They said, oh, no, we can't do that. That was kind of the end of that. But I think there'd be something. There's got to be something we can do. Let's talk. Our show.
Loic and I are doing a show tonight, actually. It's sold out.
See? He's doing that leaders thing now. Yeah. Are you going to go to – is it over?
No, it's tonight. We're doing a show.
He's in Paris, and you're here.
No. We're doing it in San Francisco. He lives in San Francisco.
He does it all over. But isn't their leader's event, isn't that going on in Paris at some point? I thought maybe it was last month.
He's doing them all over the world, but the first one was in Paris. The second and third ones are here in San Francisco. Tonight is the one on VR, and it's sold out. So which is true, by the way, of literally every event I've been to that has the word VR involved in it, they're all sold out. It's really, there's a lot of attention in this industry right now.
People are very interested, aren't they, in VR? Again, I'm skeptical. I'll talk more about why I'm skeptical, because it's not just the nausea thing. Our show today brought to you by Wealthfront. Now, whether you are impecunious or loaded, very important that you save money, right? For your future, for retirement, for the kids' college fund, for that house you want to buy to stop being a renter, for a rainy day fund. But long-term savings is challenging, and I'll tell you why. You can't just put it in a savings account anymore, a CD. That's like throwing money away. You might as well put it in your mattress. You need to be an active investor, but who has time or the knowledge to be an active investor? See, I thought, probably like you, you're smart. Oh, I'm going to read all the books. I'm going to learn everything there is to know. Then I'm going to invest my money wisely. What they don't tell you, or they do, and I just skipped that part, you got to monitor this stuff. Every quarter, at least, you got to rebalance. You got to think about where your money is. You got to reinvest. It's challenging. And, of course, you know, I went in with the best intentions and a few years later forgot about it. Now, 10 years later, looked at it and went, oh, maybe I should have been paying more attention. Okay, that's not the solution. Oh, I know. You go to, there's a guy down on the strip mall down the street. He's got a shingle out. He's a investment advisor. Now, aside from the fact that if he's so good at investing, what's he doing on the down the street at a strip mall? But let's assume, no, the guy's a genius. He just wants to help you. And by the way, for helping you, he takes 1-3% of everything you make every year. Now, I don't know if you've checked the returns on investments these days, but taking 3% out of your investment means you're not really making much money. And that doesn't even cover the hidden, you know, the transaction fees. They put a lot of stuff in there. You'll end up, it's very hard to make money that way. So I got a better way. Computers, they're cheap. Not your computer, Wealthfront's computers. See, Wealthfront has created software that will invest for you. They create a portfolio based on your risk tolerance, your long-term goals. This is long-term investing. This isn't day trading. Don't confuse that. I know people do day trading with computers. This software is designed to maximize your returns after taxes. They do tax loss harvesting. Ask the guy with the shingle down the street if he even knows what that is. I bet he doesn't. This is stuff that they don't monitor your investment every quarter, every month, every week. They're constantly monitoring it 24/7 because it's a computer. It can do that. And they maximize your return. Now, if you're wondering, well, what strategies do they use? Their advisory team includes Burton Malkiel. That's the book I read, one of the books I read when I wanted to learn how to do this myself, A Random Walk Down Wall Street, Charles D. Ellis, Winning the Loser's Games. These are the top guys, 200 years of investment experience in their board, 16 investment books. These guys put the knowledge into the software so that the software does right by you automatically every single day. Wealthfront's process, their question and answer based on Nobel Prize-winning academic research, the best investment practices. I have heard from so many people who have taken advantage of this, and I want you to learn. I don't want you to invest. I want you to learn about it by going to wealthfront.com/triangulation. You can. One of the things you'll do, if you want, you can go through the question and answer thing. It's very brief. They've really tailored it to find out exactly what your goals are, and they will generate a free sample portfolio for you. So you could just start with that. Just see, they're giving that to you for free. They will also analyze your current investments to see how diversified you are, what fees are costing you, are you minimizing taxes, is all of that working? So those are all free services, and at least do that and read up on what they do. If after you read about it, you say, you know, this kind of makes sense, Leo might be right, put in $500. That's the minimum investment. At least find out. Here's the good news. For the first $15,000 you invest, it's managed for free. No charge, and not free for the first year, but free forever. So this is a great way to start your nest egg. Great way. They've just introduced their 529 college savings plan. So if you've been looking for a 529, this is great. This is for your kid or your grandkids for their higher education expenses. This is a new government program. It's a really great system. And now they do it. That's why they've got $3 billion in assets and are growing rapidly every day under management. This is a really good solution. You might have seen the Wall Street Journal article about all those brokers. The big ones, not just the guy down the street going, what are we going to do? The computers are coming. Wealthfront.com/triangulation. Learn about it. That's all. Just learn about it. I think you will agree. So many of our viewers have sent me emails saying, wow, thank you. This really works for me. It's really a good solution. Our guest, Robert Scoble. He's the Scobalizer. I've known him for 22 years, 23 years. And I love you. I heart you. You're just the cuddliest bear. And you just, every time I see you, I smile on my face. Because you find joy in this stuff. You really enjoy it. And we need that. And then, of course, you made your trademark, and this started a couple of years ago when you started working at Rackspace. You and Rocky would go in with a camera, and you'd say, what's your name? What do you do? What is the first line you ask?
Who are you?
Who are you?
Yeah. And it's a question everybody can answer.
It's an icebreaker, isn't it? Who are you?
Yeah.
And these startups, of course, are dying to tell their story.
I started that, by the way, at Microsoft. I I would interview people on tapes. Remember those things? Little
what? On tape?
Yeah, on tapes. Yeah. And I wouldn't put their name on the tape for some stupid reason. And a week later, I'd be editing it. And I'd be like, who the heck is this? What's his name? Where, you know, because I would do like 10 in a week.
Perfect. And so you start with that. And now you got at the beginning of the tape, you know who you're talking
about.
But, you know, it's great. It is a great question. That's what we want to know. What are we doing here? What are you doing? What are you up to? And it's always been, are you still going to continue to do that?
Oh, yeah. I've been going around the world. In the last month, I've been in 11 countries. I was in Israel and saw autonomous drone company. I saw a gun lock company. Just some crazy stuff over there.
Actually, a gun lock company would be, I'd buy in on that. That's going to be a big, big business.
Actually, they have a pretty interesting way to get. It's not really even smart. It's just really nicely designed. It's designed by a former military guy or a couple guys out of the Israeli military. And they saw that there's a problem with toddlers getting guns and shooting their friends or shooting themselves. And
you go back to Israel a lot. It's amazing. Yeah, why is that such a hotbed of innovation?
Part of it's the military. It's like Silicon Valley. You know, most people don't remember that literally everything you're using on your computer was funded by the military in some way. The internet was funded by the military. Siri was funded by the military. Quadcopters were funded by the military. HGTV was funded by the military, right, at SRI Labs. Self-driving cars were funded by the military. DARPA had the DARPA challenge, right? And on and on. Many of our technologies in our world were funded by military. And in Israel's case, they have neighbors who hate them, and they invest a lot of money in military technology to make sure that their neighbors don't kill them all, you know?
I would rephrase this. I mean, yes, that's true, but I would rephrase this. It just shows that government funding or seed funding, doesn't have to be full funding, but government seed funding of innovation, of incubators, returns a great value to the society. Yeah. So France is trying to do, you know, France is historically...
In Israel, every kid has to go in the military for three years, right. And they take the smartest of those kids because they give everybody a test, and they put them in a program like called 8200 program or other programs, and that's where the startups happen. You get in the military for 3 years, you learn how to do something like a vision system on drones, and then you come out and you have, you know, three or four buddies, and you start a company. That's what this company Aerobotics that I saw. That's exactly how it was started. And they are highly skilled and highly educated and are doing really amazing base technology. You see a lot of sensor development, a lot of medical machines come out of Israel, a lot of vision systems. You know, a lot of the stuff that's in the Tesla car, for instance, comes out of Israel. So, yeah, it's one of those places where you go and you come home just amazed by what's coming in the next few years.
What about Asia?
I'm going to Asia more and more because that's where everything's made, you know. And
if we've always said China, they're copycats. They don't innovate. But I think that they're starting to innovate, aren't they?
Absolutely, they are. And here's one major trend. One of the things I'm noticing in a lot of startups around the world is they're using machine learning or deep learning to automate something. Like in Israel, I saw a company that it took thousands of medical scans, trained the system what looks like a cancer and what doesn't, and now your future MRI will just tell you while you're in it, oh, sorry, you have cancer.
Yikes.
And it'll be more accurate and faster than the doctor is, right? And this is how self-driving cars work. This is how sentient.ai is doing this with the stock market. They trained it on how to buy and sell stocks, and it's doing really well. And what does China have? They have 721 million internet users. In the United States, we only have 380 million citizens or people here. And only, you know, 70 or 80% of them are on the internet. So China has more people, more data, and data is going to be the oil of this new economy. If you can figure out how to train something faster than other countries, you're going to be ahead. And watch. Well, you saw it, right? DJI is a Chinese company, came out of nowhere, and now that drone has systems on it that avoid objects. Why? Because it's trained to do that with a system. By the way, part of it's built here in Silicon Valley, but it shows that there's a new type of company coming out of China because their market size is so immense. And yeah, watch them over the next decade. They're going to really bring a lot of new things to us.
Yeah, I remember, I'm old enough to remember that in the early days of Japan and manufacture, it was copycats. Yeah. And it was Japanese goods were considered cheap transistor radios. Young people don't know that because they remember the Sony era where it was the best stuff, the Walkman and stuff. But that's what seems to be what happens. Then Japan got eclipsed by Korea. Korea made the same choice that the Japanese made. I'm told that the folks at Lucky Gold Star, their CEO, said, you know, we want to, why aren't we as big as Sony? We can make good stuff. So they changed their name to LG and they stopped selling in the back of the drugstore and they started making great products and their ascendancy happened. But now I think a very similar transition is happening to China and we're seeing TCL and Hisense and more, not copycats. Not cheap clones, but actually innovative technology coming out of China.
It also has to do with government policy. I toured a art factory in China, and he said in the last 3 years, the government has started defending trademarks and copyrights. And he said that's a huge shift from the government to be able to legally protect innovative works. And so you're going to see their companies are now spending money on R&D because they know it can be protected even in the internal market, which their internal market is so immense. I mean, when you go over to China and see how many people use cell phones and use them in more advanced ways than are being used in Silicon Valley, it's just crazy. And
that's
this is going to be a big powerhouse.
We talk a lot about WeChat and how WeChat is a model for messaging and bots is completely different from what we do with it. And I don't know. I mean, I know you know Mark Zuckerberg. You've talked to him an awful lot. I imagine that he looked at that as a model for what they want to do with Messenger, right?
Absolutely. And when I spoke over China last year, nobody uses business cards. They scan the phones. And now, of course, Messenger has a scanning capability.
Interesting.
And Snapchat
has. So now we're the copycats.
Yeah. and with machine learning, this is where I'm going. Today, America is ahead in self-driving cars. Google is ahead. And many, many car companies are doing
but
really
innovative
stuff.
But I hear Didi, the Chinese Uber, is miles ahead of what Uber's doing.
And I would expect them to pass it even if they weren't ahead today. Because once the system starts learning about people on the streets, there's way more chaos on a street in China than there is in the street in San Francisco.
There is, yeah.
And there's more data. There's more people with phones to study. So watch them. China's one of those places I think the centricity is moving from Silicon Valley to Beijing.
Yeah.
And I think over the next decade, that's going to clearly be a clear trend.
I remember in 2009 going to China and being very impressed. And of course, when you see Shanghai, every 5 years it has a different skyline because they're constantly rebuilding and changing. And you really realize that the energy and the passion and the brains that are there. But I remember talking to my guide who was an Australian who was living in China for decades, so he spoke excellent English and understood the West, had studied in the West, but was also kind of had adopted China. And I said, I think China is the next lion. This is going to be the Chinese century. He said, no, there's lots of underlying economic issues that are going to be very, very challenging. And I think you look at the air in Beijing and you realize that it isn't just automatic.
Nope.
There's a lot. It's going to be a challenge.
They have huge challenges, but they have huge advantages too. And it's interesting.
What do you think? You say something that I think a lot of people don't like to hear, which is that it's government intervention and support that makes the difference in countries like Israel and China. And China is a totalitarian.
It's London, right? You want to start a startup in London? There's a lot of government support.
Not anymore.
Paris, there still is government support for startups.
In France, I was just talking to Jason Heiner, who'd spent some time in Paris with the startups. Probably you were on the same trip. I don't know. And he was very impressed with the incubators the French government was starting. France has a real challenge. It's a very old-fashioned, traditional country with an extraordinarily hidebound education system that does not foster any kind of deviation from the norm. They want everybody to, hew to the line. You decide at a very young age what you're going to do for a living. If you want to be a doctor, you decide at 16, and you are tracked and tested and put in the fac, and that's it. And that's been a problem for France. And I think that they've recognized this, and the government is doing a lot to change this. New schools, new incubators, new ways of doing things.
I think this is the future of employment. I mean, in Illinois, I visited a company called Agrible, and they have 90 employees. That was already 5 months ago. And they grow virtual crops there. And it's like, what? Yeah, they take data off of the satellites and off the Doppler radars and off the price feeds for the corn price and whatnot, and off the other data that the farmer has. They analyze it with machine learning. They then sell that data and grow virtual crops based on that data. They predict how good the crop is going to be next week, and they sell that data back to the farmer and say, next week you should not plant because you're not going to make any money, or you should put more fertilizer on your field 3A because the satellite says you don't have enough nitrates in the soil or whatever. And they're doing really well. And that's a company that could not exist 3 years ago, 4 years ago. And it's a company that got risk funding, venture funding. And it's really hard to fund that kind of company in many places around the world, because think about, the culture in many places. They would react like, what? My kid's going to work in a farming company that grows virtual crops? What is that? And why would we fund that? Crazy. Or I just interviewed the founder at AltSpace VR and did a really interesting interview. But one of the questions I asked was, how did you pitch your company when there's no headsets, there's no market? How did you get $16 million from Google Ventures for your company? And he explained how he did it. But it's a new social VR company. And he said, I had an amazing demo, and people here in Silicon Valley like to bet on things that are weird. And many people around the world, many rich people around the world, just don't understand how to do that. And you hear this when you travel. A lot of kids are like, God, I wish I could start a company like that in London or Paris or Tel Aviv. Tel Aviv is a little different because they would fund that kind of company in Tel Aviv. But in many places in the world, in Australia, and they say it's really hard to get the capital to start a company like that because the rich people just don't understand how to take risk with their money this way. And, this is why Silicon Valley is still fairly important in the world.
What would you do if you were king? Or should we worry about China and Asia and Israel and France, or what would you do if you were king of America to keep us competitive?
I would worry more about Uber and worry about what we're going to do with a million people who are going to be put out of work by machine learning.
More than a million. I mean, drivers alone, 1.5% of all employees in the United States drive for a living, a truck, a car. And I don't think there's much of a job in 10 years for those people.
Well, if I was king for a year, I would say, your job clearly has about 7 years left in it, maybe 10, maybe 15.
Now it's time to retrain, isn't it?
Yeah. How do we pay for you to go to school so that you can learn a new skill and get into one of these new careers, like growing virtual crops? There's going to be more companies like that that need highly skilled people, or building art for a VR company. If VR really succeeds, we're going to need a lot more content. Like you said, you need more content.
I think that's one reason Patrick became a police officer. It's clear that's a job that's not going to be replaced. RoboCop is not in our future, probably, I hope.
Well, even there, when they shot the shooter in Dallas,
yeah, it was a robot, wasn't it? Yeah.
Well, they used a human-driven robot, yeah. So it wasn't an autonomous
same.
Robot.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's a slippery slope. And, you know, yeah. Next time it might be an autonomous robot.
Yeah, but
robot,
remember, if your son is the man in blue on the other side, you will be very happy that they used that robot to protect him.
I argued about this on
You don't want
Facebook.
To see him storming that guy, well-armed.
No, I would rather him use a robot. And, yeah. In fact, I think that's part of policing now is how do you use technology to police.
Right.
And that's going to be a big deal. And they're resistant as well, right? Because they know if they train the robot on how to go in and handle a situation, why do you need the police?
Well, we don't need Judge Dredd, that's for sure. So, but I do think we are entering into a very rocky time. We've already seen what kind of disruption the internet has proven in many industries, including my own industry and the newspaper industry and the music industry, and how many jobs have been lost, how many jobs have been reinvented. And it's just beginning. And when you add machine learning and artificial intelligence to this, we're going to go through a period of much increased income inequality, a shrinking middle class, a shrinking of opportunities for young people coming up. And I think a lot of unrest, a lot of civil unrest, because I think this is going to be a very difficult period. Now, you're an optimist. Are you optimistic about that?
I am. I see a lot of problems, and I see a lot of the issues you're talking about. Because, you know, the average taxi driver is not ready to work at a job where they're growing virtual crops or building autonomous drones or building VR games or building virtual objects for HoloLens or something like that. These are the jobs of the future.
Yeah, but they're not going to be in the U.S. They're going to be in Asia, too.
No, there's going to be a lot of jobs here. I mean, I go around the world and I see a lot of new jobs that just couldn't exist 3 or 4 years ago. But they are highly skilled jobs,
yeah.
And they're technology jobs. They're, you know, even if
well,
you
they keep saying
if you're a
skilled precision machinist, you could get work in the United States any time of the day. But the problem is people aren't learning the skills that are going to be the skills we need going forward.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, the low skilled jobs, those are the jobs that go away, the low skilled jobs. When I was a high school student, my first job was working at McDonald's, and I worked through college at McDonald's and in food service because it was a job that required no skill. I learned a lot about working hard and about working, but it wasn't a highly skilled job. Those jobs are not going to be available to our kids. You know,
but here's a job that didn't exist last week. There's people now, I just saw this on Facebook, who are driving people around to play Pokemon.
Right. My son this summer, what did he want to do? Be a Lyft driver, right? But the problem with that, that's a great entry-level job, by the way, if you got a car. The problem with that is it's not a long-term solution. That's why he's going to college, right? He's going to learn some skill, I hope, and something that he can use. Let's take a break. Robert Scoble is our guest.
Even if you have those skills, you got to learn how to learn because your job is going to change every 3 or 4 years. Constantly.
Yeah. I'm glad I'm old. I'm also glad I get to see this, but I get to see this from a safe place. And, I have kids in their early 20s, and I don't envy them, and then I think about the kids who are in grade school now, what their life is going
to
be like.
But even you have to learn. I mean, when I first met you, you had no idea what HoloLens was going to be.
I love that. But I'm a spectator, right? I'm not inventing these things. I just get to play with them. I'm a spectator.
You're inventing the media that covers them, right? And so you got to constantly learn. If you just kept
the skills you had
20 years ago, I mean – 20 years ago, you were talking about replacing the drivers in your Windows 95 machine, right?
Yeah. That's a skill that will never die. Our show today brought to you by Corning. Where's my cables? I love these. So, you know, we talk so much about fiber optics, right? That's the wave of the future. No more copper cabling. Replace it with glass. The huge carrying capacity. I remember when we started doing fiber optics here in the basement for our big SAN drive, the big hard drives where we recorded video to it and pulled it off. We needed that speed, but But I remember Russell saying, now those orange cables, don't step on those. Don't bend those. They're glass. We've come a long way. Who knows glass better than Corning, right? These guys, Gorilla Glass, they are glass gurus. They make much of the fiber optic cable in this country, and they have innovated a new, stronger kind of fiber optic that you can bend, you can twist, you can step on. This is not your daddy's fiber optic cable. This is Corning optical cables. They're thinner, lighter, stronger. They can go farther than copper cables. And the nice thing is, even though Thunderbolt and USB 3.0 were designed for copper, they've figured out a way to make cables that can use light with your standard connector. So that connector at the end of the cable takes the signals from the copper connector, turns it into light. The connector at the other end takes the light, turns it back into copper. From your point of view of your drives and your computers and your devices, there's no difference, but you'll notice a difference. With Corning optical cables, you can go 200 feet with Thunderbolt, 165 feet for USB 3.0, making it easy to move noisy, space-consuming devices away from your workspace. That's why studios use it so often. That's why I love it, because I have a very quiet computer with solid-state everything and a big old backup drive that vibrates the desk. I now can put it in the other room or under the desk or somewhere far away because I've got Corning optical cables. Universal Audio, you may know them. They make these incredible Thunderbolt audio interfaces. Naturally, they need acoustic isolation in their studio. They use Corning optical cables to achieve that isolation where they test new equipment like their Thunderbolt audio devices. They can move all the noisy stuff. There's a video on the site if you want to find out more out of there. Corning's products available at all major electronics and professional AV retailers, including Apple stores, Amazon, B&H, and more. Corning optical cables, hot swappable. You can daisy chain up to 6 Thunderbolt devices. Let's see, 6 times 200 means you can get a kilometer away. Is that right? Am I crazy? You can bend or walk on them. Even if they're tangled, they keep transmitting at top speed. Corning's cables, longer, thinner, lighter, and stronger. Go to Corning, C-O-R-N-I-N-G, Corning.com/twit, and get this, you could save up to $130 on Thunderbolt optical cables. This promotion is only valid from June 1st to July 31st, only till the end of the month, so don't delay, or while supplies last, whichever occurs first. So if they run out, you'll be out of luck. You want to get there right now, Corning.com/twit. I use these Thunderbolt optical cables with, I have a Thunderbolt 3 drive from Akitio, and I use it with that, and it's awesome. I mean, when you're pushing, 500 megabytes a second, it's amazing. Thunderbolt optical cables and USB 3.0 optical cables from Corning. Corning.com/twit to save up to $130 on those Thunderbolt cables. Our guest for this triangulation has been Robert Scoble. We should just interview you every 6 months because there's always something new, and you are the king of the new. You play in Pokemon Go?
Oh, yeah. I'm on level 4, though.
Yeah, you got to get into it because once you get to 5, then you have to choose a team. And by the way, Team Valor!
I heard the red team is...
red team.
That's the red team, right?
Yep.
Team Valor?
Yep.
I heard that's the one to join. I'm almost there.
In
half the day, we've tapped out all the... all the Pokemon assets.
I would have thought we'd have solved scaling problems by now. But these servers are constantly going down, and I'm sure that's driving the folks at Niantic and Pokemon crazy because you want to get all these early adopters. They were going to roll it out internationally. They've slowed down the rollout. It's only Australia, New Zealand, and the U.S. The problem is so many people want this now. They're doing sideloads, APK sideloads on Android, and so they can't keep the servers up. But I would have thought scaling would have been solved by now. This feels like the early days of Twitter. Remember that, the fail whale?
Yep.
So many people doing it, and you see it everywhere. It's not true augmented reality, I think it's the kind of first taste that will get people a little more aware. You've been mentioning HoloLens a lot. So many people have said, oh, HoloLens, and I'll throw Magic Leap in with this too. It's a great demo. The videos look great, but the reality is very different.
No, I disagree. When I visited a company up in Seattle where their office is mostly white walls, and they had something like 40 virtual items around the office, including their workspace was five virtual screens. And yes, the viewing angle is narrow. The glasses are really dorky right now. They're big, and they're $3,000, and you can't get them unless you're a developer. And even then, my friends who are developers are waiting in line to get them. So it's clearly 3, 4, 5 years away for the average consumer. For us,
by the way, that's no time at all.
The average consumer, maybe another. Yeah, I mean, 5 years ago, this weekend, I was watching the last space shuttle take off. I mean,
right.
5 years goes by really, really quick.
Especially when you get to be old like me. But it goes fast. It accelerates, doesn't it? It goes faster and faster. But this is 2016. I mean, yeah. We are living in the future now, right? This is the future. And now, I think people know the difference between virtual reality and augmented reality. Are they linked? Are they related? Or are they really two different, completely different ideas?
They are. I say they're two storms. The VR one is hitting the shore right now, and the AR one is a bigger storm, but it's out there, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6 years out there.
Is it VR, the new user interface?
VR means, let me go over and get my headset here.
He's going to put his Vive on. The guy, we can't keep the Vive off of him.
Now,
really, be honest with me, though. How many hours a day do you spend wearing VR gear? You don't.
Today, an hour.
Yes, maybe it's me. Maybe I'm getting old because I don't play video games as long as I used to either. But I don't find it that compelling that I go, oh, I can't wait to get off work and put my helmet on.
The social VR is really pretty cool.
I'll have to try
that. You been into something called Rec Room?
No.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing. And there's better ones coming. A high fidelity.
Reverb Mike in our chat room says they're birth
control. Space VR.
Calls them birth control and goggles.
You know what? I don't have that problem anymore.
You don't need that. You don't. Kids. Birth control, good, Robert. Good. Stop now. And your kids
and
love
my
these.
Kids my kids love it. Yeah. The kids took to it faster than
that's
they took
more
to
telling.
The
I mean, that's more telling. Although, yeah. Remember we said, kids take to the iPad like crazy. They get it right away. That hasn't really propelled iPad sales any further.
Yeah. It's going to be an interesting couple of years and see where it goes. And so back to the question, VR, you're stuck in a black box. You don't see through this
right.
to the real world. AR, you're looking through optics that put virtual items on top of the real world. And like if I was wearing the HoloLens, there could be a dancer on the floor here. There could be zombies coming out of the wall. In fact, I played a game that was exactly like that. And the zombies actually look like they're coming out of the wall. And you look around and you walk around the game and it's stuck on the wall. It's amazing technology that they're using to do that. And yes, it's early days. We don't have the categorization systems done. The optics are still fairly sucky. The systems need to be shrunk down so that they can be much smaller and much nicer looking. What else needs to be done? Audio needs to be way better because
audio's best on right now. The Vive really wins on that. Or no, the Rift really wins on that because it has built-in headphones and the sound quality is excellent. There's a Rift, the Oculus Rift, yeah. But the Vive is the one with the paddles. Maybe that'll change when the Rift gets its paddles later this year.
Later this year, yep.
The Vive you can move around. The Rift you can't. The PlayStation VR, it looks like it'll be a seated experience mostly. Have you played with Magic Leap? Because this is the one that everybody's excited about. But all we've ever seen is video demos that are obviously lies.
It drives me nuts because I know the vice president of communications over there and he won't let me see it.
Well, that worries me. Is it another Theranos?
No, they're just not ready for consumers yet, and they don't want to talk to consumers too much. Wired did an article on it.
Yeah, and by the way, Kevin Kelly, who wrote that Wired article, got a lot of heat because he seemed like he just bought into its hook, line, and sinker without in any way explaining how it worked. They showed pictures that were
They're not allowed to explain it. That's one of the agreements that the early journalists. They're not allowed to explain the optic chips and how they remove light from your iPath and how they put light in, and also how they handle that convergence you were talking about,
right.
and that's some of their secret sauce. And they're not allowed to talk about the eye sensors that are in this thing. It's actually six technologies that are in a product, and they're not also allowed to talk about the form because it's big and prototypey right now and dorky.
We saw the picture, and there were a lot of wires and a lot of stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
But then they release videos, which are suspicious, to be kind.
No, they're pretty accurate.
You think so?
From a lot of people who have seen all three products, the Magic Leap, the Meta, which I've seen, and the HoloLens, which I've seen, say that the Magic Leap has better optics and better sensors than the other systems.
So when are we going to see it? Do you know?
I'm hearing that it'll be next year, maybe at the Consumer Electronics Show or at TED.
That's six months.
That doesn't mean you're going to be able to buy it.
No, but seeing it would help. Understanding it would help. Then we could at least judge whether it's real or not.
HoloLens, it is real because they got $1.3 billion. And investors don't.
Can I tell you what Theranos' value was at its peak?
Yeah, I know, but you know, it's good enough to give an amazing demo, and everybody who has seen it says it's the most amazing thing they've ever seen. So, and for instance, Ted Shilowitz, the futurist at 20th Century Fox, the movie company, says it's the most amazing thing he's ever seen. So, I've had enough people who've seen all three say it's amazing technology. We don't yet know if it's an amazing company, although they've made amazing hires. And we don't yet know what Apple's going to do. I mean,
you mentioned Apple at the beginning. Is Apple really a player in this, or are they just going to let this pass them on by?
Apple's playing the Steve Jobs playbook, which is let everybody else go out front, prove that there's a market, and then come in and fix the problems with it. For instance, let's talk about VR alone, and this is why I'm bullish on mobile rather than Oculus, right? And I think even Oculus, the brand name, is going to be far bigger on mobile than it is on a headset that costs $800 and controllers. In Israel, I saw controllers that cost $10, and you can put them into guns and into swords and other things and let you do much of the same stuff I'm doing with the Vive in mobile with your hands. I've seen sensors that are similar to these lighthouses that cost very little money that you put up around your house, and it'll build a virtual area where you can walk around in it. Those are clearly about 12 months away from being on the market with mobile headset. So I should have brought my Samsung Gear VR down, but your viewers know what that looks like.
Yeah.
You put a mobile phone into the Gear VR, and now you have virtual reality headset. The problem with that, there's several. The screens aren't sharp enough. Well, many companies are bringing 4K screens out in the next 12 months. The GPUs are not powerful enough in the phones, and they get hot.
Yeah,
and
they really do.
My Samsung Gear VR goes off after about 40 minutes of playing, because it just gets too hot, and then the phone says, oh, sorry, you got to let it cool down a bit. And so there's new GPUs coming in the next 18 months. Certainly 36 months solves that problem. And then there's no way for the phone to really know where it is in the space you're in. Well, Google Tango sensors are coming this fall, and that solves that problem. And Apple bought this company called PrimeSense from Israel, which also solves that problem. So I think Apple will come out with a phone-based VR probably late next year, because they are going to wait for everybody to prove that it works, and it's starting to prove out that it works. And they're going to come out with a product that fixes these, you know, three or four areas that are not there yet for mobile. And mobile, I think, is going to be how most people play VR, not Oculus Rift or Vive, because these things are expensive and they're dorky and and they require a PC, which who wants a PC, to be honest?
Right.
Sorry, Microsoft, you know?
Well, but you've spent a lot of money on your phone.
Yeah, $800 for each. Well, $800 for this.
Well, the phone is $800, and then this is $99, the Gear VR, so you've spent a lot of money on your phone. Why not use that? That's a powerful computer. You know, it's interesting because Apple's phones right now are not even 1080p. So, or maybe I guess the big one is. But they've got a way to go. They have not made 4K screens, unlike Samsung, which has for several years. So that will be one telling thing, is when you hear rumors that Apple's newest screen is going to be 4K, that's going to be...
What's really funny is I was sitting next to one of the buyers for Apple on the way to Korea. Why would a buyer from Apple go to Korea? There is nothing in Korea except for LG and Samsung.
And OLED screens, yeah.
I banged on her for half an hour. Tell me what you're going there to buy. And she wouldn't say a damn thing.
To be fair, Apple does use Samsung flash RAMs, and I think they use some Samsung chips. So
they do, but come on. They are going to come out with a VR headset next year, and they're going to come out. They're playing the Steve Jobs.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. They don't want to be the first. They don't want to get all the arrows in the back. They're going to be the second.
Apple wasn't even the second of the audio players. Remember, the iPod came out way after Creative and after other people proved that the market wanted a digital audio player. And same thing with iPhones. iPhone wasn't the first phone. We had Nokia phones for a decade before.
They got to be careful, though, because Samsung is doing it. And Samsung may end up, just because they have more experience and they're getting a lot of feedback. You mentioned data. They're getting the data.
I'm switching to Android because of VR. And this is a dangerous trend for Apple. If Apple loses the rich people to Android because of VR, they are going to see a huge disruption.
But what's the use case for this? I mean,
all sorts of stuff, man. There's all sorts of stuff. There's a doctor in South Africa who works with high-end athletes, and she's having those high-end athletes exercise their eyes on a computer screen or in VR. And she's taken the worst cyclist on the South African cycling team in terms of numbers of falls per race, and today, after 8 months of playing her game, he's the best at falling per race. And she has many, many success stories like that. So you're going to play medical things with VR. If you're depressed, your doctor is going to prescribe it, sometime soon, because the studies are showing that it's very good for that. Pain relief, if you're getting surgery, you're going to play VR to get
over your depression. I'd wear this at the dentist.
Absolutely.
You know what? Maybe I'll bring it to the dentist next time. Do you mind if I watch a movie? We're out of time. I realize
and
now.
And the kids are coming home too, so they're going to want to play
VR.
I realize now
we need to have you on much more often, Robert Scoble. Let's talk. I think we'd love to find a place for you here.
Thank you so much.
The Scobalizer. You follow him on Twitter, and you'll find out all sorts of stuff. Take a look at his lists, because he's a obsessive list maker, both on Facebook and Twitter, and those lists are really valuable. I don't think anybody uses lists on Twitter anymore, but you do, and they're good. They're really good. And of course, we'll keep an eye on all the stuff you're doing about VR. Thank you, Robert. We do Triangulation Mondays, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern time. That's 1800 UTC. You can watch live on twit.tv, be in the chat room, irc.twit.tv. I call it Triangulation because there's three of us in the room. There's you, me, and our guest, and you are very important. So please try to watch live. If you can't, though, on-demand audio and video always available after the fact. twit.tv/TRI. If you're listening to the show on an airplane, we welcome you, and you'll find a lot more of great conversation and interesting information about technology on our podcast network. You'll find it all at twit.tv. We're so glad you're here, in the air or on the ground. We'll see you next time on Triangulation. Bye-bye.